May it please the court, Brooke Burbank, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state of Washington in this matter. Against an overwhelming body
rebuttal time
of case law. Oh, I'm sorry. I would like 4 minutes, please. Thank you. This court granted Bradley Ward a release trial solely on the issues of the conditions
Not
of confinement.
Court.
I'm sorry, the trial court here. Thank you. I am hoping this court will reverse the trial court. The court's ruling is contrary to the overwhelming body of evidence from the United States Supreme Court, from our state Supreme Court, and from this court's recent decision in Hatfield. Even assuming that Mr. Ward could prevail at this trial, the only relief that he has requested is release, and that relief is not available to him. The parties are now facing a pointless trial in which significant questions remain, such as what are the elements to be proven, what is the burden of proof, and what is the standard of proof? And most importantly, the party responsible for the conditions of confinement is not a party to the action litigating those conditions. This court must reverse the trial court and strike the trial. This court held in the Skinner matter, in re the detention of Skinner, that ultra vires proceedings are void, and that is exactly what we have here. He has been committed as a sexually violent predator, and the statute is clear that his only avenue for release is when a court determines that he is no longer a sexually violent predator. He has a separate trial pending on that very issue, and if he is successful, he will be released. But the trial here was ordered simply, it cannot go forward. And it is important to note that Mr. Ward is not challenging the constitutionality of his confinement. He is not challenging the constitutionality of the statute, both which would be available to him. He's not even making an as-applied challenge. He is merely alleging that DSHS is not the proper facility for him to be detained in. And he is essentially arguing that equity allows any party in any proceeding to pursue any remedy without reference to the nature of the proceeding, the identity of the parties, and the forms of relief available. And again, that is clearly contrary to well-established law.
So are these procedural defects as opposed to an attempt for someone to raise a claim that doesn't exist? In other words, if he had filed a declaratory judgment action seeking a declaration of his rights pursuant to the statute and had named DSHS as the opposing party, would he be able to go forward with some or all of his claim?
That's exactly the process that he should be taking, with the small exception that his requested relief of release is not available. Turay, Sealing, and Campbell all make very clear that the relief is to fix the defect, and he has not even alleged that he wants DSHS to fix his alleged treatment defects. What he wants is to be released and then sent to Western State Hospital.
Could he do that in the context of this proceeding?
I think the only way that he could do that in the context of this proceeding is to challenge 7109045, which precludes SVPs from being housed at a state hospital. Had he challenged that, there is a small possibility that the court would have jurisdiction and could look at that portion of the statute. But again, that is not what he has done.
It would have to be a constitutional challenge?
I think that he would have to raise it as a due process challenge, but I'm having a hard time figuring out exactly how he would raise that. But that is the narrow scope of the statutory provision that he might be able to challenge in this format. Merely alleging that a better facility a different facility is more suitable for his treatment needs is really inappropriate under the statute, and that flies in the face of Skinner, Campbell, Turay, Sealing versus Young, all of the cases that hold conditions of confinement are outside the scope of 7109. So, I would just point the court to this court's recent decision in Hatfield, which specifically addressed a very similar challenge, and the court there held that the conditions of confinement are far outside the scope of the treatment. The state has raised three separate assignments of error here, that relief is an available remedy, that DSHS is not an indispensable party, and that the court has jurisdiction.
Would you agree that if we find this relief's not available, we don't need to reach the other two?
Yes, Your Honor. I would agree that this court can just simply void. Our position is that Skinner makes it clear that this order ordering a release trial is void because the court has no jurisdiction over the conditions of confinement and over DSHS. GAH makes that also clear.
I don't know that it's, I mean, you're saying it doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction?
In the way that this was raised, yes, we are saying that it doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction because
it may not have the power to grant a particular grant of relief. It may not have that authority under the statute, but clearly it has subject matter jurisdiction over the statutory scheme and over those persons who are subject to it.
Absolutely. We don't dispute that. The distinction is that the court does
the
not have subject.
The order isn't really void. It's just wrong.
It's just wrong. Saying. It's erroneous. Any order stemming from the trial would be void. Again, there, DSHS is not a party, and so any order ordering either changes in the conditions of confinement or release, as he's requested, would be void because DSHS.
Well, would it be void or just not binding on DSHS because it didn't have an opportunity to litigate?
Well, under the analysis in GAH, it would be void. Under the analysis in Skinner, it would also be void. There just simply is no jurisdiction.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Nancy Collins, here on behalf of Bradley Ward. Mr. Ward stipulated his commitment at the SEC when he was 19 years old, and that was 25 years ago. That was right at the very start of the SEC. The statute was enacted in the 1990s. Been there for a long time.
So what's the reason your side of the fence doesn't just convert this to a deck action at the trial court and proceed, since the state seems to think that would work?
I agree. I think that would be another proper procedural vehicle for this. They hadn't previously.
I can envision somebody on the phone after oral argument today saying, why don't you file a motion to amend your initiating pleading to seek declaratory relief and join a party?
I agree. I think that would be a totally appropriate vehicle for resolving this. Here, the trial court, you know, had been receiving monthly updates because Mr. Ward was at a LRA that had been ordered in 2007, and was understandably frustrated at this very sad situation of Mr. Ward's deteriorating condition, and the psychiatrists and psychologists who provide in the court with updates about that condition, which squarely blamed the SEC for exacerbating his mental health problems. And based on that frustration and real concern about Mr. Ward's health, ordered an evidentiary hearing, and that hearing hasn't occurred. And really should, and the court should be allowed to, in the context of its monitoring and overseeing of this scheme, engage in that hearing when appropriate. And this is one of those rare situations where the court was justifiably concerned about real damage occurring to Mr. Ward. And that's simply all that occurred here. Again, even though a declaratory judgment could be filed, this is a perfectly appropriate vehicle to do so as well. The court is simply having a fact-finding hearing, and nothing else has happened yet.
Is there some authority that in the context of a SVP proceeding, which is what this is, that the court can take up issues outside of whether or not Mr. Ward continues to meet the definition?
The court's broad overseeing power, the constitutionally and by statute, to exercise its equitable relief.
But isn't that why it needs to go through a different vehicle? This is a statutory proceeding with the parameters of the proceeding defined by the legislature. To give you an analogy, it's a much different situation, but in the landlord-tenant situation, we have an extraordinary remedy provided in the way of an unlawful detainer proceeding. We said you can only litigate certain issues in this statutory proceeding. If you want to litigate these other issues, you have to convert it to a general civil action. And everyone seems to agree that a declaratory judgment action is available, so no one's trying to impinge upon the inherent or constitutional authority of the court. They're just defining the procedure that's available to do that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a valid point. And I don't think that the trial attorneys here were trying to broaden the umbrella. It was sort of raised as a due process violation, but they weren't attaching a specific name or
is this the only kind
it.
Of proceeding in which Mr. Ward has access to counsel?
this is his only access to counsel.
Is that the real reason that it's in this?
Yeah, I mean, and you can see from the proceedings here, the state moved for sanctions for defense counsel sort of overstepping its sort of narrow statutory authority. And I think that they would still have authority to file a declaratory judgment, but the state would probably oppose it and say you don't have authority to do anything other than act within the statute, which is, you know, another problem. Here you have someone who's so mentally decompensated that, he has a guardian ad litem and he can't really participate in things, and then he's expected to.
Well, he probably doesn't have resources.
No, and certainly doesn't have resources. He has been, at the SEC since he was 19 years old. In 1991. So, just faced with that circumstance, the judge wanted to know more and felt that it was within the judge's realm of overseeing this ongoing litigation. And where there is this less restrictive alternative the judge was monitoring, there was a unconditional release trial that had been scheduled but postponed because of the inability to sort of gather the necessary information for that. And in the context of that oversight, the judge ordered a hearing based upon evidence that hasn't been disputed that taken, at face value is very concerning.
Is there a date set for the unconditional release trial?
It has been set and postponed. As far as I know, I'm not sure there's a firm date right now. I know right now they have been litigating Mr. Ward's placement and trying to get him into another facility or care facility that's they've been having obstacles with the SEC about. So we ask you to remand the case to let the judge have an evidentiary hearing on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
To answer Judge Behrman's question, the unconditional release trial is currently set for October 2016. And I just want to be clear that we are not conceding that declaratory relief within the context of the SVP proceeding is appropriate. As Sealing v. Young makes clear that Mr. Ward's remedy is to file a declaratory injunction or some other civil rights action against DSHS. So if he can serve and file against DSHS, then certainly a declaratory action would be appropriate. But again, his remedy seeking release is inappropriate. So if this court is inclined to remand to the trial court with instructions regarding declaratory relief,
Nobody's asked us to do that.
Okay.
We usually don't invent our own solutions to problems others haven't created for us.
It just needs to be clear that DSHS is a dispensable party and that the relief requested is not available.
What? I'm just musing as to whether or not we ever trip over our own selves.
You agree if we decide that this is not available relief, we can just ignore the rest of that, though?
Given that it is still in front of the same trial court, we would request a ruling that all three of the issues in front of this court are...
Well, tell me how that proceeding could go forward if we told the trial judge you can't grant the relief these folks have asked for.
Well, that remains a good question, Your Honor. Given that DSHS is responsible for the conditions and what Mr. Ward is seeking is transferred to Western State, and that is clearly not an avenue.
Well, he's actually for a little more than that. He's asking that he be released.
He
and
is
then detained at Western State. Which
that's correct. And again, the trial court has no authority over DSHS in either the SEC or Western State's facility. So a declaratory injunction would not help Mr. Ward seek the relief requested in that avenue either. I think his only way out is to show that he is no longer a sexually violent predator. And then if he still wishes to be considered for commitment at Western State Hospital, that is up to the mental health professionals there. I do also just want to touch the equity issue, which I think the court clearly understood that equity is not available here because there are specific statutory procedures, and this court is unavailable to fashion its own remedy, and again, in the face of an overwhelming body.
He is entitled to adequate care, though. You agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And is there any way for him to decide that he's not receiving it and not going to receive it? Is that simply really sort of an issue that a right that cannot, without a remedy, essentially?
No, I would strongly disagree with that. First of all, we take issue with all of the facts.
I understand that.
Presented.
He's making the allegation, and who makes the judgment then? Is it simply up to Western State, to the SEC, to determine whether they're giving adequate treatment or not?
No, I think it should be up to the court if he to follow the U.S. Supreme Court and the state Supreme Court if he were to bring DSHS into an action.
So and if I could interrupt you, he could file a DEC action. He could present expert testimony as a standard of care for someone in his circumstances and demonstrate that the care he's receiving falls below that standard of care and ask the court to order the DSHS provide the minimum standard of care required by expert testimony.
That's exactly right. That's the only relief available to him in this narrow context.
Okay, but he can't do that in this proceeding.
Correct.
And he doesn't have counsel to do it anywhere else.
He has counsel. He has a GAL.
And you would oppose his counsel in this?
Well, the statute does have a provision that conditions of confinement, again, are outside the scope of representation. But he also has family members who have been involved in his placement over the years as well. I don't know what specific resources he has, but he does have many individuals. Counsel has filed PRPs and lawsuits on behalf of many of the individuals at the Special Commitment Center.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Felipe versus Labor and Industry.